I don't care what they say. I simply cannot believe that Eleanor Roosevelt is a lesbian.
The other students, at the beginning when I first transitioned, they were fine. They were way better than compared to the teachers and the staff at that school.
I committed myself to being visible and being her advocate and her ally 100%. Doesn't matter who you love.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Australia's tight national elections squeeze marriage equality's future, a motivated mom is fearlessly raising Zoe, and pop stars raise their voices and their hands for Orlando. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Michelle Marie Gilkison.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the week ending July 9th, 2016. As we first reported last week, the results of national elections in Australia have been too close to call. The future of marriage equality could hang in the balance. While nothing is firmly settled as we record this newscast, votes are still being counted. The consensus now generally seems to be that Liberal Party Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull and his coalition government will remain in power, although by an extremely slim parliamentary margin. Marriage equality activists say that election results already suggest that there will be enough votes to pass a bill to open civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples in the next parliament, if coalition MPs are allowed to vote their conscience. Equality activists have long argued against the planned non-binding national plebiscite on the issue, which Turnbull has consistently supported. But some analysts say that a narrow governing coalition majority could be fractured over the issue, as more and more Liberal Party MPs have expressed support for equality. Measures for both a marriage equality plebiscite and a conscience vote would have to pass the Senate, which seems to have a solid pro-equality majority to go forward. Opposition Labour Party leader Bill Shorten has vowed to pass marriage equality legislation within the first 100 days of his administration, which is now apparently an unlikely scenario. All told, as one news outlet concluded, the future of marriage equality in the land down under still looks murkier than ever.
Emotions at the 36th annual LGBT Pride Parade in Toronto range from celebratory to confrontational. At the head of the procession, Justin Trudeau became the first sitting Canadian Prime Minister to march in the parade. He downplayed the historic moment, however, telling local reporters that it shouldn't be a big thing that the Prime Minister is walking in the Pride Parade, and from now on, it won't. Record crowds were reported, including some 11,000 participants at an earlier trans march that organizers said made it the largest of its kind in the world. 73 drag queens and kings also made history by breaking a Guinness record for the world's largest stage show of drag artists. The previous record, established in 2014, was 55. The day-long event called Drag On was hosted by Lady Bunny and Bianca Del Rio from RuPaul's Drag Race. RuPaul himself gave a rabble-rousing Out of Drag Pride Day speech from the main stage.
The Pride Parade itself came to a grinding halt, however, when the group Black Lives Matter Toronto staged a sit-in, blocking the route for close to a half hour. They complained that the event was anti-black and dispersed only after organizers agreed to a series of demands, including the removal of police entries from future parades, because, a group spokesperson said, law enforcement people make members of the black and trans community feel unsafe. Pride organizers later said that no decisions about the group's demands had been made and that they only agreed to them at the time to get the parade moving again. Canadian media has been mixed at best about the Black Lives Matter action. Conservative Globe and Mail columnist Margaret Wendt called the group bullies. A Toronto Star editorial said that Black Lives Matter should think twice about making outsiders of its allies in the fight for inclusion and respect. But Joshua Ostroff, a senior editor for Huffington Post Canada, wrote that LGBT rights have progressed because of protest, and people who have benefited from those actions should look beyond themselves and consider the struggles of those still fighting, because pride is, always has been, and always will be, political.
Many pride parades around the world, including Toronto's, included an increased police presence and memorials to remember the massacre at the gay Pulse nightclub in Orlando, Florida, that killed 49 people and injured 53. The parade in Paris, which also included marchers wearing black armbands and holding a moment of silence to honor the victims, was curtailed by police officials because of security concerns. More than 1,000 police officers were reportedly on hand, three times the number at last year's parade. And organizers postponed the annual Pride picnic in College Station, Texas, after threats of violence were posted on social media that they said police and the FBI are actively investigating. College Station, the home of Texas A&M University, sits about 90 miles northwest of Houston.
Some LGBT activists have been organizing around an additional movement goal in response to the Orlando massacre. A new group called Gays Against Guns marched in the New York City Pride Parade and held several brief die-ins to protest the National Rifle Association's stranglehold on efforts to pass even the most common-sense gun control legislation in Congress. An estimated 500 people marched in the contingent carrying signs that read, "I am Pulse" and "Flowers, Not Guns." 49 people dressed in white garments and veils marched silently behind them, each carrying a large photo of one of the Pulse victims with their name and age. And the Washington Blade reported the formation of a new political action committee in Washington, D.C. this week, called the Pride Fund to End Gun Violence. According to its organizers, the group wants to focus LGBT community efforts on electing lawmakers who will support meaningful gun safety legislation and defeat those who won't.
In other news, almost half of the United States are suing the Obama administration over its guidelines on transgender student access to bathrooms on federally funded school and university campuses. The guidelines call for trans students to be able to use the facility that matches their gender identity. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton filed a motion on behalf of a coalition of other states asking for an injunction to prevent the Obama administration from enforcing the guidelines. Joining Texas were Alabama, Arizona, Georgia, Louisiana, Maine, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Utah, West Virginia, and Wisconsin. Paxton's lawsuit challenges the premise of the Obama administration's guidelines, which say that federal civil rights laws banning bias based on sex also ban discrimination against transgender people. A second lawsuit, using similar arguments, was filed a few days later by Nebraska, in coalition with Arkansas, Kansas, Michigan, Montana, North Dakota, Ohio, South Carolina, South Dakota, and Wyoming. The Obama administration guidelines issued in May are not legally binding, although they spell out the obligations schools have to their transgender students and suggest a possible loss of federal funding for noncompliance.
But voters in Washington have rejected an effort to put an initiative on the November ballot to overturn a state regulation allowing trans people to use the bathroom of the gender with which they identify. Just Want Privacy, the organization supporting the proposed Initiative 1515, canceled a much-ballyhooed morning appointment to turn in enough qualified signatures on July 8th. According to its website, the group had collected 190,985 signatures, significantly less than the 246,372 valid signatures of registered voters required to qualify an initiative for the ballot, and far short of the 325,000 the Secretary of State's office recommends because of possible invalid or duplicate signatures. A state regulation that took effect in December requires buildings open to the public, including schools, to allow trans people to use restrooms and locker rooms that match their gender identity. At the time, the Washington Human Rights Commission said the new rule was a clarification of the state's existing anti-discrimination law that added transgender people as a protected class in 2006. Also on July 8th, Republican Governor Charlie Baker of Massachusetts signed a bill that will allow the Bay State's trans citizens to use the restrooms and locker rooms that correspond to their gender identity. The new law takes effect on October 1st.
And finally,
oh my!
It looks like the Star Trek universe will finally have its first openly gay character. In the upcoming Star Trek Beyond, Lieutenant Hikaru Sulu, played by John Cho, has a husband with whom he's raising a young daughter. Cho said that he likes the idea that the revelation is made matter-of-factly in the course of the story, which he says represents where I hope we are going as a species. He noted that it's also a loving tribute to the original Sulu, portrayed in the TV series and first batch of spin-off movies by now openly gay George Takei. Takei said he was nevertheless disappointed that a character thought to be heterosexual all this time is suddenly shown to be gay. He says he would have preferred a character who has a history of being gay, rather than Sulu, who had been straight all this time, suddenly being revealed as being closeted. He said that Star Trek creator Gene Roddenberry supported LGBT rights, but when the show originally aired in the 1960s, a gay character would have been way beyond pushing the envelope for network television, especially considering the stir created by a heterosexual interracial kiss between Captain Kirk and Lieutenant Uhuru. But screenwriter Simon Pegg, who also stars as Chief Engineer Montgomery Scotty Scott in the upcoming film, said he respectfully disagrees with Takei about Star Trek's first out gay character. He told reporters that director Justin Lin and his co-writer all loved the idea of it being someone we already knew because the audience has a pre-existing opinion of that character as a human being, unaffected by any prejudice.
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 9th, 2016. Produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Michelle Marie Gilgeson.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
Updating the news about Australia's national elections, vote counting continues, but the opposition has conceded victory to the coalition government of PM Malcolm Turnbull. Labour Party leader Bill Shorten said that while Turnbull had won the right to pursue his Liberal Party's policy agenda, Labour would stand firm on some of its priorities. One of those priorities just might be a vote in Parliament on marriage equality, rather than Turnbull's proposed plebiscite on the issue. Stay tuned. A trans teen's mom defends her against ignorance and hate, and performers lend their hands to a love offensive. Later in the program.
We got long stories,
short stories,
art stories,
sport stories,
books about the wild, wild west.
Yeehaw!
We got fairy tales,
scary tales.
We've even got some hairy tales.
It's hard to choose which ones are best.
So hard!
We got silly books,
sad books,
good books.
If you're looking for a good book to read today, This Way Out queer life and literature commentator Janet Mason has a couple of suggestions.
Two books with queer subject matter that I read recently reminded me of everything that is wonderful about reading. Loving Eleanor, The Intimate Friendship of Eleanor Roosevelt and Lorena Hickok by Susan Wittig Albert is a beautifully written and richly detailed historical novel that lets the reader fully enter the time span of journalist Lorena Hickok and Eleanor Roosevelt's love affair and intimate friendship. The book also chronicles the sacrifices that both women had to make to keep the rumors at bay about their relationship. Hickok left the Associated Press, where she was a highly regarded reporter, because of a conflict of interest with her relationship with Eleanor, who was then the First Lady. She took government jobs as a writer and was transferred to remote locations. We hear the thoughts of Hickok firsthand in the writing of the author. I wasn't to linger in Washington where gossip still linked my name with hers. I would later learn that Princess Alice had exclaimed loudly and in a fashionable Washington restaurant, I don't care what they say, I simply cannot believe that Eleanor Roosevelt is a lesbian. In Bull and Other Stories, Autumn House Press, lesbian author Kathy Anderson does not address a LGBT audience in most stories, but she does explore the queerness in the thoughts of married couples toward each other, employees and bosses of children to their parents, and of parents toward their children. She does so in such beautifully written and intriguing ways that I was turning the pages without a thought to the world around me. Her prose is often bitingly funny. In Dip Me in Honey and Throw Me to the Lesbians, Anderson gives us the thoughts of an upscale foodie lesbian. We are so not losers, Jane thought. This is proof. Look at us in a fabulous restaurant enjoying ourselves. Take that, ex-lovers. Reading these two books reminded me that reading helps you learn more about yourself, in addition to learning about the world in all of its time dimensions. Reading is like looking in a mirror and seeing things that not only have you never seen before, but things you never expected to see. This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and leisure for This Way Out.
Art benefits life in a new Orlando tribute anthem you'll hear at the end of the show, and now in a new documentary about a pioneering trans teen and her ally mom that's coming soon to the Queer Film Festival circuit. Our Abby Dees and Wenzel Jones met the dynamic duo who took us.
Things you want are real.
You have you to complete, and there is no deal.
Zoe Luna at 13 years old, challenged her school for the right to simply be herself. And in 2014, with the help of the ACLU, she won her case and opened the door for other trans kids to also be themselves. And we're also here with Zoe's mom, Ophelia Barbas, who has been her daughter's fierce ally throughout. You were in a loving, strong family that came together. But at some point, you, and this is, I think, what the film deals with, you realized that the community beyond your family or your immediate support system was not so supportive and was not, I mean, was cruel.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering when that began or when you started kind of realizing that this was not going to be easy for the rest of the world.
Well, I started noticing that it wasn't going to be easy right as I went into preschool, because that's actually how this whole story came about, I think. There was this one lady, she ended up following me to elementary school, just out of coincidence. So she was an aide, and I think, whatever, not about her. So she was upset because at dress-up time, I would always tend to be the princess or the secret detective woman, or I would be anything that was the woman, not the man. I wouldn't be the firefighter, and she was always upset with that, and was just like, let me do me. And so she actually contacted, like, the supervisors of that, and they all, like, told my mom, they were like, I think she needs to go to counseling because this is a little
off,
yeah.
So she wasn't comfortable with Zoe's behavior, and we never told her she couldn't do that. So at home, she can be who she wanted to. She ran around with her hoodie jacket as her hair, towels, everything, and she played with my shoes. And so there wasn't any stopping, like, oh, you can't do that. You're not supposed to do that. Of course, there was moments of don't, because dad might get upset or it's causing problems. But this aide, at the end of the day, was not comfortable with it. So she needed something to happen, and she suggested to the director that they speak to me. The director spoke to me and said, you need to go to counseling. And I said, okay, let's do that.
Because she actually thought it was going to help, and it did.
Well, I needed it because I needed to get everybody on board at home. They were going to give me free counseling, and we were going to be able to settle the situation. I said, let's do it. And it was wonderful because not only did that counselor have knowledge about the LGBTQ community, gave me information, helped me work with my oldest daughter, my son. And so at the end of all this, it was half a year of therapy. I went home like, okay, I know where we're at. Then we had to figure out moving forward.
And you stayed in the same school through the whole transition.
Yes.
So now how were the other students?
So the other students were, at the beginning when I first transitioned, they were fine. They were way better than compared to the teachers and the staff at that school. So it wasn't really a hard time with them. A couple of them were like, ew, you're going to go to hell. And I was like, okay, well, see you there too. But then, so I just really got over the kid problem because I was just fighting to stay in the same class I was in and the same school with the teachers and the administrators. So it wasn't really a concern with the students.
So this brings us to the lawsuit.
When I contacted the ACLU, they told me this is the process that we suggest you do, which was file a complaint with the United States Department of Education.
And what was the complaint about? What were you asking for?
Discrimination. First of all, they wanted to expel her from school for coming out, expel her from school for saying who she was and how she felt about herself. Everything was inappropriate that she talked about. I was given an ultimatum. Mm-hmm. You, through the fall break, Thanksgiving break, either you find somewhere to go, you let us help you, or if she gets in trouble one more time, we're going to expel her.
And getting in trouble meaning showing up as a girl?
Getting in trouble was defending herself.
Yeah, so. Every time I would go to the office to tell them that I was being bullied by someone, they would have meetings with the bully, and they would be like, how are we going to make this look like she did it to get herself into that position?
We never heard that, but
that was the feeling.
That's what it looked like a lot of the time.
And there was a particular teacher you had an issue with.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Which is why all this started, was because on one occasion he made her stand up in the middle of the class and recite a pledge that she would not be, what was that word?
That I wouldn't be obnoxiously loud.
Obnoxiously loud.
When I laughed just as regularly as every other student in the classroom, he just had a thing for me.
And then she wore feathers in her hair, clip-on feathers. I mean, she was starting to express. And the third one was where she came home and she said, I can't handle this anymore. I have to literally keep my head down in class and just cover my face, because if not, he'll pick on me and all the other kids will laugh at me. My last straw was, and this all happened in a span of about 2 weeks, he said, smile, brother, you look disgusting.
Because I had mascara running all over my face.
Yes, this is a teacher.
How did you survive this?
Well, I had my mom,
I went to the school, I actually...
Wrote the most beautiful emails I've ever seen in my life.
Email. I asked him why. Hmm. I said, if you're a teacher, why would you do this? Why did you not call me?
Did you get an answer?
No.
Never.
Have you been afraid for Zoe's safety?
All the time. There's not one day that I'm not concerned. Am I worried that she can get hurt? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because she's young. She's very impressionable, even though she's very smart. And no, she's very mature for her age. That's also pretty scary.
Yeah.
But the whole thing, the fear is always going to be there. But if I don't let her present, if I go against it and I want to hide her away, who am I hurting the most? So I can't do that. I can't do that. I committed myself to being visible and being her advocate and her ally 100%.
You can find out more about Raising Zoe on Facebook and follow the film on Twitter. The music continues to flow with the tears in response to the Pulse massacre in Orlando, Florida. Here's the latest tribute song.
Can hold a gun and hold your heart. Put out fires and make them start. Skin and bones and flesh and blood. With all this nerve, how did we get this numb? They can hurt, they can heal, they can give back or they can steal. They can break the world, or they can change it too.
Doesn't matter. put out fires and make them start. I've been watching news and seeing all this hate. Tell me, is it wrong to want a little change?
Performers like Tyler Glenn, Halsey, Adam Lambert, Mary Lambert, Troy Sivan, Alex Newell, Jussie Smollett, the Trans Chorus of Los Angeles, and RuPaul were joined by allies including Mary J. Blige, Jennifer Lopez, Britney Spears, and Gwen Stefani for this benefit single called, not surprisingly, Hands. Proceeds from downloads of the song, available exclusively at iTunes, will go to the Equality Florida Pulse Victims Fund, the GLBT Community Center of Central Florida, and the queer media watchdog group GLIAD. Thanks for discovering This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Michael LeBeau, Michelle Marie Gilkison, Janet Mason, Randall Kleiser, and Abby Dees and Wenzel Jones contributed program material, with thanks, as always, to Steve Pride. Between the Lions and Sly and the Family Stone performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our listener supporters, for making this show possible. Check out the latest program information, pics of the crew, and a lot more at thiswayout.org. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WFCS New Britain, Connecticut, KZYXNZ, Fort Bragg, Philo, Coastal Mendocino County, Willits, and Ukiah, California, CFUR, Prince George, British Columbia, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.